James, thank you so much for a great conversation today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Again, check them out at RethinkX. Check us out at mobilize.news. Thank you so much again, everyone. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Radio is hiring. We are accepting applications for an engagement coordinator. The engagement coordinator is responsible for sharing KBOO's mission and values across a variety of social media platforms. They also share content created by volunteers and co-sponsors. We are looking for individuals who have skills writing marketing copy and creating and editing graphic and multimedia content. To apply, send your resume and cover letter to hiring@kboo.org. Applications are due by midnight Sunday, June 4th. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. For more information, go to kboo.fm/engagement-hire.
Ayo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Born from challenge with a vision for future solutions, we are PDX Progressive Talk Radio, and we're talking to the leaders of government, nonprofits, and businesses seeking answers and having some success. Listen to us live at 7 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of each and every month as we seek to grow, learn, and progress. We are PDX Progressive Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone, and hello, Portland. This is Moses Ross. I am your host on PDX Progressive Talk Radio. And you're listening, of course, to KBOO 90.7 FM on your dial. It's the top of the hour. And we have a couple good guests for you tonight. I'll give you a little quick preview of it. We have we're going to be talking about campaign finance reform for the first part of the show. You know, there's been a lot of things that have been in the news lately that have just brought home the point that we need campaign finance reform in the state of Oregon. We'll go into a little bit of that, and I'll do a bit of an intro, and I'll introduce you to my guest that will be speaking on that, Jason Cafori. He's a local attorney, and he's also involved with the Honest Elections Oregon group, good governance group. But we'll go into that here in just a moment. Also, a little bit later in the show, we will be speaking with Casey Hansen, the former chair of the Democratic Party of Oregon. And we're going to be talking about a campaign that she is working on called Equal Rights for All Campaign. Yes, on SJR 33. I'm really looking forward to sharing that with you folks a little bit later in the program. So let's get into campaign finance reform here real quick. And I'm assuming my guest will be calling in here any moment. If he hasn't already, he might think they're on the phone right now. But to lead into this, I just want to share, you know, campaign finance reform has been under the spotlight in recent weeks because former Oregon Secretary of State Shamia Fagan resigned over ethics concerns stemming from her work as a paid consultant for La Mota Cannabis Company. And she did that at the same time as her office was overseeing a audit of the state of the state's cannabis industry. You know, she recused herself from the audit due to her paid work with the group, but she did receive $10,000 a month. with incentives up to $30K in bonuses. And additionally, campaign finance records show that LaMotta owners donated $45,000 to Fagan's campaign between September 2020 and April 21. And that's just in addition to the many other contributions that they made to other Oregon politicians. So to discuss this with me tonight, my guest is attorney Jason Kafori, and he's with the organization Honest Elections Oregon. So welcome to the show. Welcome to PDX Progressive Talk Radio, Jason. Oh, we're going to make sure you get in here, okay? Can you hear me now, Jason? We've got these fancy new phones here, you know, that we have to connect our outside lines into to get them on air. But how about now? Jason, are you there? I'm not sure if I can hear him right now. Sorry about the dead air here, folks. We'll be connecting with our guest, Jason Kafori, with Honest Elections Oregon. But, you know, just kind of continuing with that theme of what we're going to be talking about, you know, the state, they saw a record amount of money spent during the last gubernatorial election, the 2022 gubernatorial race. And you may remember the candidates, they ended up spending over $80 million. And that included funding from Phil Knight, who donated millions of dollars to the Republican gubernatorial candidate, Christine Drazen. And two, also, he double-dipped and he gave money to the non-affiliated candidate, Betsy Johnson. So, you know, you combine that situation with the Shamia Fagan situation, it's just really brought home the point. It becomes really obvious that moneyed interests in Oregon feel it's in their best interest to flood Oregon elections with their cash. And also, just a quick note to I just received a text from our guest, Sherry, and he's saying that he's on hold right now. He says he's hearing hold music. So we're halfway there to being able to get him on, you know. So between the gubernatorial race bringing in this issue up to the forefront and people trying to basically purchase, people like Phil Knight and other money's interests trying to purchase these races. And, of course, you may remember that during the congressional races, we had Carrick Flynn, who received millions of dollars from crypto investors who ended up bankrupting, if I remember correctly. You know, so all that crypto money is just another example of the need to start to regulate this kind of finance in our campaigns. Are we on right now with Jason? Jason, are you there now? Nope, not yet. Okay. We'll get this figured out here soon here. So as you can see, we've got a situation here in the state of Oregon where basically legalized bribery is okay because of the lack of regulation of campaign finance. And so when our guest is able to get onto the, get patched through here, we'll have a good conversation about it. We're certainly having a bit of a challenge with it, that's for sure. But, you know, one of the things that I am very proud of when it comes to campaign finance reform is the fact that where we live here in Portland and in Multnomah County, voters have passed forms of campaign finance reform. You know, in the county, we had a charter review commission that put it on. Oh, and Jason, are you there now? Not hearing him yet. Okay, so as I say, in Multnomah County, we passed one back in, what was it, about 2016. 2015 is when the committee met and it was placed onto the ballot, and it was overwhelmingly approved by voters. Over 70% of voters approved the Multnomah County campaign finance reform measure, which added a layer of transparency to the donations and put contribution limits on on how much a person could contribute. And transparency was also an issue as far as how much being able to show who has donated to a campaign. Once you, by giving those types of issues sunlight and transparency, it makes such a huge difference. How about now, Jason? Jason, are you there yet?
Testing 1, 2,
yes,
three.
Sir. I hear you.
Hey, can you hear me now?
I hear you, Jason Kefouri. That is
wonderful. I thought it was a conspiracy of people that didn't like campaign finance reform. They didn't want to have you talk about it. That's what was going on there.
Well, I thought it was just people wanted to see me tap dance or something because I was dancing around the microphone here waiting for you to get on. I'm really happy you made it, sir.
Yeah, well, I'm ready to rock and roll. What should we talk about on campaign finance reform or the lack thereof?
Well, I think that the lack thereof is the big issue that we have here, Jason. You know, as I was filling airtime here talking about it, you know, I was giving the example of how in the 22 recent gubernatorial race, millions of dollars were contributed, over
almost
$80 million.
$80 million almost. Yeah, crazy amount of money.
And mostly by folks like Phil Knight and other moneyed interests. Tell me what's fundamentally wrong with that.
Well, I think that, you know, we have, what, 4+ million folks that live in Oregon. When only a tiny sliver of the people are giving, and they're the ones that are giving in such large amounts, it makes it so that ordinary Oregonians don't feel a part of the process, they don't feel like their voice matters, and they don't feel like politicians are listening to them. And I think they're right, frankly. I mean, I think if how can you say someone who gives millions of dollars like Phil Knight doesn't have a better connection with an elected official than an ordinary average citizen who can't afford that, you know, who's just making a regular wage, 10, 15 bucks an hour, something like that. I mean, our system has been completely polluted by having unlimited political contributions be the way of the Wild West out here in Oregon for decades. And it's the Oregonians want this to stop, and it's time for it to stop. And we're going to try to put something on the ballot in 2024 to make that happen, assuming the legislature can't get anything done, which it doesn't look like that's going to happen here in the coming weeks.
Right, right. You know, let me give an example that's been in the news that I led this interview with, and that was what's happened with former Secretary of State Shamia Fagan. And
right.
The amount of money that was spent to not only pay her to be a consultant, but was actually contributed to her campaign. How's that? That situation really seemed to highlight the fundamental problem with our current finance system.
Yeah, those folks are crooks, frankly. And not only were they giving these massive tens of thousands of dollars donation to elected officials, including our governor and our former Secretary of State, they were doing it in cash. I mean, are we living in a developing country where people hand briefcases with cash to politicians to get what they want? It's crazy. I was dumbfounded to think that an elected official would be taking tens of thousands of dollars in cash, physical currency. So, A, we need a rule, like the federal rules, where you can't take more than $100 of cash from any individual. That just seems like a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. I think even the Republicans and the legislature put forth a bill in the last couple of weeks. That should be a bipartisan slam dunk bill. It's pretty hard to defend, you know, taking large amounts of cash. The problem with that is, how do we trace who actually is giving the cash?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, at least if you have a credit card or a checking account, it's coming out of an individual or an entity's name from a bank account. But cash, you know, give me a break. So the whole thing just did not pass any of the smell tests you could possibly come up with for what is a healthy democratic system here in our state.
Well, I do know that there have been local efforts and local successes in passing campaign finance reform. Let's talk about those a little bit, and how are they going to affect what the plans are for good governance groups to get something going statewide?
Well, yeah, just a little history for the listeners. It wasn't until the mid-90s that we actually had any contribution limits in Oregon, and those only lasted for one cycle, the 96 cycle, and then the Oregon Supreme Court ruled that they were unconstitutional, and that has been the rule of law for the last few decades until the Oregonians passed Measure 107 and the Oregon Supreme Court stepped in based on a local ballot measure that you and I were involved with back in 2016 here in Multnomah County, measure 26184. And that ballot measure limited contributions to our county races of $500 per person, and also required donors to disclose in their advertising, you know, what the true source of funding was. So it was a transparency and a limits bill. And that has been very effective, and voters wanted it overwhelmingly. I think it passed with like 89% yes, which is almost unheard of for a yes vote. And then the city of Portland, we followed up with a ballot measure in 2018. I think it was 26200, if I'm remembering correctly. And that one passed again, a similar structure of limits and transparency on who's giving the money for City of Portland races. That passed with almost 88% support. So people in Multnomah County and people across the state want to limit big money from influencing their elections. When we worked together in 2020 on the statewide ballot measure 107, that amended our Oregon Constitution to say, yes, it's okay to have limits on political contributions, and yes, you can have political donors be disclosed in advertising. That those are constitutional things. That passed with, I think, like 76% yes vote. And so, you know, that was it passed with those kind of numbers in very red Republican areas and in very blue Portland areas. Campaign finance reform is one of those few issues, Moses, which really cuts across left, right, independent. The citizens want to believe that their politicians are not bought and sold for. And they want to see real limits on what people can take to even the playing field for both people to run for office, to feel like it's a fair playing field, and so that there's not undue influence or corrupting influence of money in politics.
Absolutely. You know, one thing I noticed that the effect of the campaign finance reform regulations in Multnomah County made for a quiet but thoughtful Multnomah County commissioner race this last cycle.
True. Yeah,
There were no obscene advertisements on TV. There, I think they both of those candidates maxed out at 150K. You know, so the point being is
it was about the issues. It wasn't about the overwhelming amounts of money.
Correct. And it's interesting how that can be pointed to it as an example of what can happen when you get that kind of moneyed influence out of those elections. You can actually start to talk about the issues.
And you and I have talked about this a lot, but you know, the best system, frankly, is what we have going now in the city of Portland, where you have not only limits on individual donations of $500, transparency as to who's giving the money, but also a public funding system so that people can take small donations and get them matched from taxpayer dollars and allow them to run serious, you know, full-bore campaigns without having the undue influence of influencing their policy or their decision making. Mm-hmm. That's the model. You know, if we could get that statewide in Oregon, we would have the healthiest democratic system. Instead, we rank 49th in the country. Oregon is 49th according to the Center for Public Integrity's, I think, 2014 or 16 study. We rank 49th in how we regulate cash. I think we're one ahead of Mississippi, which is not where you want to be.
Well, you know, I look at the public funding, and you know, there's always been a debate about whether or not government should be spending money on elections in that fashion, you know, helping candidates like that. How do you counter that argument?
Well, it's not that much money, first of all. When you look at billions of dollars that municipal entities spend on any given, you know, cycle, we're talking about a few million dollars. It's really not that much. I think the total spending was only several million dollars in this last Portland city race. So would you rather have people taking unlimited checks, or would you rather take a very small percentage of our taxpayer dollars and give politicians enough money to run to have the ability to get their message across, but not have the undue influence of big donors dominating the election cycle? And I think most people would say, hey, I'll shave off a couple pennies on my taxes if we could collectively allow people to still be able to run meaningful campaigns that are issue oriented, but not have big you know, dominant donors being the ones that they're listening to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and when I ever think, when I think personally of public funding, I always have to look at the Seattle model. Because
yes.
Can you tell my listeners about that Seattle model and how they go about it with that,
Yeah, it's called Democracy Vouchers, and I would love to see Oregon at the statewide level potentially implement something like this. They just passed a similar measure actually in Oakland, so we will have two models on the West Coast going. What happens is every voter gets issued Democracy Vouchers. They get $100. I think it comes in $25 chunks, and you can decide if you want to donate one of those $25 chunks to a local person running for office in Seattle or Oakland. And then if you do not decide to give it to any politician, the taxpayer dollar is never spent. So it's not, you're not wasting money by allowing people to make these donations. But what I like about that system is I think everybody agrees that if you have grassroots support, meaning you have, you know, hardcore volunteers that are out willing to hit the pavements for you, that's usually because you're saying something that's resonating, right? And if you have that kind of a system and you have enough, you know, organizing power to get out to people's doors, to be on the phones with them, talking to real voters and saying, hey, if you like my message, if you like what issues I'm campaigning for, why don't you donate 25 or 50 of your democracy vouchers to my campaign? I think that's a beautiful way for a democracy to work. It has shown statistically a lot more people that have never given before and that are much lower income have been contributing to politicians in Seattle. I think that's a wonderful thing, and it's something we should if not at a local level, statewide, be looking to do in Oregon.
Yeah, let's talk about that here in just a second. You're listening to Jason Cafori. He's an attorney representing the organization Honest Elections Oregon. We're talking about campaign finance reform and the recent efforts. And, of course, you're listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your dial. So thank you for being here. Jason, you know, given the overwhelming support for campaign finance reform, as indicated by the decisive wins, the voters in Portland and in Multnomah County, over 80% approval rating for those reforms.
Yeah,
one would assume that the Oregon legislature is paying attention and realizes that this is an important issue. Are there bills that are addressing this in the session?
You know, unfortunately, from my communications with leadership on both the House and Senate, it sounds like the Republican walkout is killing any possibility of campaign finance reform having a chance to pass at the legislature this session, which is really sad, you know, especially after what just happened, as you pointed out, in the governor's race, $80 million being spent last cycle. But it sounds like they're probably not going to be able to get real campaign finance reform over the hill at the legislature this session. Speaker Rayfield has a bill, HB 2003. We as good government advocates have been lobbying for some reforms that we think are some essential parts to that need to be reformed before we would be a yes for it. Senator Golden has been probably the biggest champion of campaign finance reform on the Senate side. He has a Senate Bill 500, and he has actually been working with good government advocates and national experts at the Campaign Legal Center in Washington, D.C., to help craft amendments to his Senate Bill 500. We were actually in the process of starting between House and Senate leadership over this in the last couple of weeks, but from what I'm hearing, it sounds like the legislative session may be dwindling or dying as we speak. So I don't think anything is going to move. Fortunately, though, good government advocates have been working hard behind the scenes to get a ballot measure ready. And we have ballot measure IP9. We just started collecting signatures for it. We need to get 112,000 valid signatures by next July 2024. We feel confident we can pull that off. And then the voters would be able to vote on it would be a groundbreaking combination of contribution limits and transparency of, you know, in the political advertising, putting the real true source of who's spending the money on the political ads, it would probably be the best model of transparency and limits in the country, in my opinion. And voters would have a chance to vote on that this November 2024. So I'm excited. If the legislature can't do it, then we'll let the voters speak for us.
Yes, yes. And let me ask you this. If someone now wants to get involved with ballot measure IP9,
yes,
how can they get a hold of the good? What can they do? Is there a website?
So we're going to be running the campaign through Honest Elections Oregon. It's honest-elections.org, honest-elections.org. I think there's a contact us volunteer area there, but we're ready to go. If people want to go out and start collecting signatures, there's going to be volunteer efforts. There'll also be some paid efforts if people want to potentially get paid an hourly wage to collect the signatures. So we're ramping up. We just started our collection when we started to realize that real reform didn't look like it was going to move forward at the legislature, and we're excited. It's going to be a long year, but we would love whatever volunteer support out there. And I know the KBOO listeners, I guarantee we're probably batting more like 98% on the KBOO listenership for supporting limited big money in politics.
I'd venture to say that's pretty close, you know, and especially given the kind of groups that are involved with the good governance groups, it's a very wide variety of groups, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It runs the gambit from the League of Women Voters to Common Cause. Both national organizations with local affiliates we've been working with. As I said, we've been crafting these bills with the Campaign Legal Center. They are one of the big think tanks in D.C. That work on this policy in all 50 states. They've been heavily involved, and they're real smart on this stuff. They've been watching where problems have arisen in other states. So we've been able to kind of tinker these models based on where we've seen big loopholes get exposed in other places. It's the Portland Forward is part of this. Like I said, Honest Elections Oregon is pretty much a coalition of various good government groups. And we're going to be working to build, we'd like to get a big tent together around this policy. So we'd like to get environmentalists, labor, various BIPOC community color organizations. We'd like to get a wide, big tent of people that say enough is enough. Let's finally bring campaign finance reform to Oregon after all these decades.
Right on. And I think that's a wonderful place for us to leave the topic. I've been speaking with Attorney Jason Kafori with Honest Elections Oregon. I want to repeat the website that my listeners can go to learn more about their efforts about ballot measure IP9 that they are collecting signatures for to get onto the November 2024 ballot. You can go to honest-elections.org, and that's honest-elections, plural, .org. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Wonderful.
Go get them, Moses.
Hey, Jason, thank you very much for putting up with our little snafus, but at least we got the good message out to the folks.
That's right. Okay. Thank you, KBOO listeners. Onwards to 2024.
Very good, sir. Thank you very much for your time. You know, I tell you, campaign finance reform is going to be an issue that is going to dramatically affect Oregon elections from now into the future. And if this is an issue that resonates with you, this need to get big money out of politics, to level this playing field so that anyone with good ideas and initiative can get elected and they don't have to be in the back pocket of the Phil Knights out there, I really highly encourage you to get involved with these folks. Honest-elections.org is their email, is their website where you can sign in. Well, it's the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the PDX Progressive Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. And we're going to go straight from one phone-in interview to another phone-in interview here. I have on the line with me our next guest, and that would be the former chair of the Democratic Party of Oregon, Carla Casey Hansen. Casey, are you there with me tonight? Casey's going to be talking to us about a Equal Rights for All campaign that she's been working on. How about now? Can you hear me now, Casey? Can you?
Casey,
yes.
Moses, I can hear you.
I hear you. Wonderful. We've got everybody here tonight.
Okay.
Casey, thank you for being here. Casey Hansen, former chair of the Democratic Party of Oregon. And you're here tonight to talk about something that's very near and dear to your heart, this Equal Rights for All campaign.
I am indeed. And so a lot of people are probably going, what? let me start at the beginning. Early in the session in January, there was submitted to Legislative Council, which is the precursor to when bills come out. Legislators submit ideas to Legislative Council. They put them in lawyerese and legalese form, and poof, a potential bill comes out. So what we were working on, what folks were working on then, and this was out of Senator Lou Frederick's office, a bill to repeal the ban on gay marriage in the Oregon Constitution. If you remember 2004, Oregon voters decided that marriage was between one man and one woman, and they inserted it into the Constitution almost 20 years ago. Well, when you fast forwarded to 2014, Judge Michael McShane reviewed it, said, this is unconstitutional, threw it out, and then a year later the Obergefell decision came out of SCOTUS. And, of course, we thought we were all good, all fine, and then Dobbs happened last year. Mm-hmm. And Clarence Thomas was making noise about, well, we should, you know, upend all other rights. What is this gay rights thing, right? So it's like, you know, kind of got folks in motion, shall we say. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the initial conversation started in January. And over the past 3 months, just to truncate the conversation a little bit, a lot of partners were involved. I mean, your usual organizational heroes like Planned Parenthood and ACLU, Basic Rights Oregon, you know, our Stonewall Caucus Democrats were running around hollering about it too, although we weren't part of the lawyering and messaging focus efforts on it. But about 3 months after that January initial meeting with the LGBT legislators and Senator Frederick and some of these major players, 3 months later, I get a call from Senator Kate Lieber on April 19th, and she said the bill is dropping today. Well, this is very helpful. Not only is she the only lesbian in the legislature, and kind of taking the lead in terms of, you know, LGBT caucus membership, which should be more, but is about 5 members. But she's also Senate Rules Committee Chair and the Democratic Majority Leader in the Senate. Very helpful. So what the new bill is SJR, Senate Joint Resolution 33, and it expands protections. It's not just about repealing the ban on marriage equality, but it's repealing that ban, affirming marriage equality, affirming access to reproductive health care rights, and affirming access that transgender folks can get access to their own gender-affirming health care. How can we do that? It's a constitutional amendment that would come of this. How can we do that? Well, with much lawyering and some of the top political and governmental lawyers and looking at it, it's like, yeah, this is a single subject. This is about equal rights for people. This is about equal access and essentially fair treatment, right? So what happened in the Senate now, and I'm going to address the walkout real quick, is it passed out of the Rules Committee with a 3-2 partisan vote. And you could always already see that Right to Life Oregon was already bucked up on it. They already had their little ugly, well, actually their very large ugly orange stickers affixed to a lot of people testifying against it. A lot of good guys and good gals were down there testifying for it, of course. That hearing was literally a week after the bill dropped. The hearing was on April 25th, and then they had a work session in the Rules Committee on the 27th. Passed, partisan vote, 3-2, out of the Rules Committee, next stop, Senate floor. And then guess what? We have the Senate walkout start, which is now, as you know, still going on. So not only is this in limbo, but so is every other legislative bill, you know, that's down in Salem. And this has been, what, three and a half weeks now? Mm-hmm. Maybe longer. I don't know. I'm losing track of time now. But
well, this bill was a real bone of contention for the Republicans. Wasn't this almost the catalyst for part of this walkout?
Yes, it was. The basic catalyst. Now, they babbled about language being not at sixth grade level or something like that, but that was just a red herring. They have definitely walked out on SJR 33. They walked out and three other bills. One of the bills is House Bill 2002, which is basically the kissing cousin to SJR 33. It also affirms access to abortion rights. It's a statutory, it's not constitutional, but statutory, and also has, like, you know, another clause that they've added in there is making it a criminal offense to harass, attack, etc., people who at healthcare clinics. You know, you can obviously read what that is. You know, we've gone through, you know, 50 years of people attacking abortion clinics. Mm-hmm. The other two bills, SB 27 is another bill. But SB 27 is basically just attached but not attached to SJR 33. SB 27 will give a title to SJR 33. And the final bill is HB 2002, which is gun safety legislation, fairly moderate gun safety legislation, fairly popular kind of things. One of the things it addresses in there is, like, yeah, let's raise the age from buying a weapon from 18 to 21. Pretty moderate stuff, but yeah, they decided to take a trip outside of Salem, so to speak, and not show up for sessions. So the question is, okay, they're on the walkout. What happens? You know, we can go down several different rabbit holes. As you know, Measure 113 was passed by Oregon voters by more than a 2-to-1 margin in November, basically saying, all right, you can't hold office next term, you know, if you don't do your job. Right. And Oregonians were like, yeah, man, we're sick of this stuff. And they voted overwhelmingly for it.
And this was, of course, a measure that made it, if a legislator missed 10 sessions in unexcused, they would not be able to run for re-election. They were disqualified from being able to run for re-election in the next upcoming election.
Right, right. And the language is, you know, disqualified from, they would not be able to hold office. So that there's a little bit of argumentation going around. Well, they can still run. No, they can't still run. It's like, you know, no, you can't hold office. You can be disciplined. Once again, the cadre of lawyers looking at this, you know, some of the same lawyers looked at this that looked at the SJR 33. It's like, yeah, this works, you know. So, but you know, they're throwing their Hail Mary pass on this, I guess.
Right, right.
And I've talked to several of our Democratic legislative friends down there in Salem, and it's like, okay, what are the next steps? And I kind of suspected that, well, they passed the baton over to the House, and that doesn't seem to be what's happening, and that doesn't seem to be what anybody thinks is going to happen. You know, at this point, there's 10 of the 13 Republican senators have already hit that 10 unexcused absence mark. Now, some of them aren't up until 2024. Five of them are up at 2026. About half of them are up in 2024. One of those senators is retiring anyway, so it's like, you know, who cares for him? But at this point, they've got 10. They can get 15, 20. At this point, you know, they've already crossed the Rubicon on that, so, you know, what do they care? Latest I understand is that Senate Majority Leader and Senate President Rob Wagner and Senate Minority Leader Tim Knope are still talking, but not getting anywhere. Apparently, Senator Knope has said, well, we'll come back on the very last day right before the end of session so we can pass a budget bill. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, I know this from press reports, so
Maybe it'll happen, and maybe it won't, right.
Maybe, but yeah. Well, basically, apparently Rob Wagner was quoted as saying, it's like, well, it's not going to work.
And even if it does work, and they're only passing budget bills, a bill like yours with this Senate resolution may not pass. It probably won't be included right. in the bills that would be passed that day.
Right. So what do we do then?
What happens next then?
Yeah. I am confident as all get out that we will go to the citizen initiative process.
Mm.
There's a sturdy coalition, obviously. I mean, the groups I've named are just, basically, the lead, but the whole coalition effort of the Fairchild Oregon folks, Democratic Party, county parties are stepping up. Democratic Party of Oregon just stepped up and voted in support of this over the weekend in terms of, supporting the citizen initiative process and fast tracking the endorsement process for the referral if it comes out, which is very unusual for the Democratic Party, but they can and they will.
Mm-hmm.
But a citizen initiative, it would basically be essentially the same thing. We want to put this back before the citizens. This is how you change the Constitution. Fine. If you're not going to do, the Republicans aren't going to do their job in the legislature, the citizens will get it done. I believe your previous guest said something similar to that.
it is funny that both guests, it's a coincidence, but it's a pleasant coincidence that these are both issues that are requiring a statement from the public to be able to get onto the ballot, and that statement being the signature gathering process. And I venture to say that you're going to have just as much, if not better, success with yours as campaign finance reform will have as far as collecting signatures.
Well, and I think we'll have no problem getting signatures if it comes to a citizen initiative. Would I prefer a referral? Yeah, I would love to get to work on the meat on the campaign, but we will make lemonade out of whatever we're handed, whether it's a glass half full of a referral or a glass half full of a citizen's initiative. There's certainly something to be said for being able to talk about it with folks in the public, during a citizen initiative process. Referral? Heck yeah, that's a lot easier. It saves folks money, but you know what? We're going to get this done.
Right.
And let me address a couple things about the measure. Again,
sure.
Polling for marriage equality has shot over the roof. And in the 20 years since people were like edgy and turned it down in 2004, we saw a steadily increase over the years. And then as people recognize it's like, hey, I got a gay cousin. Oh, my God, my daughter's gay and that kind of thing. They started understanding. It's like, this is just about people's families and honoring everybody. So now the polling in Oregon is like over 71% in favor of marriage equality.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you and I both know that, reproductive healthcare justice and freedom is absolutely, off the mark in terms of, way up over that in terms of, what Oregonians think about,
mm-hmm.
Protecting, reproductive rights. So the other section in there, it's like a three-legged stool, protecting our transgender brothers and sisters.
Mm.
I mean, there's something to be said of supporting each singly in terms of marriage equality and in terms of abortion rights. We'd be crazy on that. We'd do great, but we need to bring our transgender brothers and sisters along and advocate for their rights too. I mean, the folks in that community there. A minority community, and they're part as Chastain Buttigieg said, it's like, hey, I'm part of an acronym. Well, I'm part of an acronym. I've got the L part of it, but I'm damn well going to help protect the T part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to protect folks, especially with there's 490 bills nationally that are attacking the gay community, mostly attacking transgender folks. And people generally believe, the public generally believes that transgender folks should be protected from discrimination, but where they get edgy, about, what about sports and bathrooms, how do the specifics work out, blah blah blah. And a lot of that gobbledygook that the Republicans like to ride the train down is just junk. It doesn't have any. It's not in any of the legislation at all.
Right. There's an example that comes to mind. It's my family test when it comes to these types of issues. I have a side of my family that is a little conservative, and I had one of my members of that family post something here the other day about their concerns about kids being drag queens reading to kids at the library.
Yeah.
And how... And she was talking about it in her post about how she's really concerned about it. I've got no problem with, you know, problem with drag performers. It's just when they're just parroting the right wing talking points on why they should be all up in arms against the transgender community.
And right. Let's shove them back in the closet. Right.
Right. And it just blows me away that it has a receptive audience. B, that it's been getting has enough legs where you have someone starting a presidential campaign today on the basis of his discrimination against those transgender people.
No, he's just a hideous man. He's just a hideous man. And think about what they're doing in Florida. The thing of it is, with the gay community, the broad gay LGBT, the acronym community, our Stonewall community. Drawn DeSantis and people like him are trying to erase us. Mm-hmm. I mean, our communities, members always have it hard enough because it's hard coming out. You know, I came out obviously many, many moons ago. In a lot of communities and with a more positive, society overall, it's been better for kids and that kind of thing, but it's still not an easy thing. And it's like, you can't always go home to your family and get nurturing support, And to tell a kid in school that I can't read a book, to keep the books away from them, to keep images away from them, to cover up their eyes from seeing who they are, that's reprehensible. The stuff that's going on in Florida is worse than what we were fighting in the 90s in Oregon when, Lon Mabon and the OCA was putting out all the thou shalt not say gay initiatives back in 1992, 94, and 2000. It's reprehensible. And as a culture, we're easier to be erased. Mm-hmm. Sexual orientation or sexual identity is not something that's easily seen. Right? Or at least how you feel is not easily seen. And so that's how people like Ron DeSantis and folks like him, he's just like, that's how he can erase us, and through the bans. And think about this too, Moses. We're not even on the census. Not even on the census. And we don't have representation in the highest chambers of government. There is not a single state legislature that has proportional representation of LGBT folks. There are 4 states that have no LGBT members whatsoever. Congress has only 13 LGBT members, and one of them is George Santos, for crying out loud.
Sorry for laughing, but yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
I think what it is what has happened is that a sense of not necessarily laziness, but just apathy has settled in as far as protecting gay LGBTQ rights because of the successes that we had a decade ago here in Oregon. We thought that everything was okay, perhaps.
Yeah.
And we've gotten complacent.
Nailed it.
And so here we are having to ramp back up again, right?
Yeah.
Activists like you and I to make sure that equal rights is across the board.
You nailed it right there, Moses, because think about this. Right now, there are 27 states that have no protections in terms of discrimination for LGBT folks, no protections whatsoever. That's the same number as 2015.
Hmm.
So We've got to make some progress here because we are being attacked, and all of a sudden we're on our heels because we don't have representation, we don't have protections, and the right wing's making hay out of the LGBT community. And just to go back to what people should expect from right wing messaging, believe you me, they are already message testing their talking points. I just presented at a county in Frontier, Oregon, out in beyond John Day, and one of the gals was saying, "Yeah, I just heard on right wing radio that they were, the Oregon bills would allow, a 10-year-old to have an abortion without parental consent." And I'm like, "Oh God, they are really crazy reaching." Mm-hmm. And she says, "Well, how do you address that?" It's like, "Well, we live on Earth 1, and that is Earth 2, or maybe even orbiting Earth 2, and it has no relevance." And that's one point of emphasis I should really make too. None of these bills talk about age of consent in any way, shape, or form. And that's a really important point. We're protecting transgender rights, and we're protecting the rights of parents who are parents of transgender kids and LGBT kids, too.
You know, as a parent, I would defend my child's choices for whatever, no matter what they would be. And so when I hear about these situations, about these young kids that are out there, youth that are being discriminated against because of the choices that they have made, sexual, it just infuriates me. And as a father, it just saddens me.
Yeah.
That they're not getting the support that they need. But speaking of support, in the next, in the last minute and a half that I have here with you, tell me what can my listeners do to help you and to help get this across the finish line?
Well, it's going to be we're going to be working on this for a year and a half. It's going to be a huge ballot measure. You certainly can, folks can connect with me, connect with Planned Parenthood, connect with Basic Rights Oregon, connect with ACLU. But if folks want to drop me a line, I'm going to give you my address. I'm happy to take an email, and I can direct folks to whatever makes them happiest. Democrats in Multnomah County have already approved this approved a resolution in support of this legislation and stuff. You can get involved with the Multnomah County Democratic Party, or if you're outside of Multnomah County, as a Democrat, you can, poke your county party and say, "Hey, you guys need to get on board too." But anyway, let me just give you kc@dpo.org, KC, two initials at dpo.org, easiest email ever. And if folks want more information, I'd be happy to share and point them right direction, have a conversation.
That's fantastic. I've been speaking with Casey Hansen, former chair of the Democratic Party of Oregon. We've been talking about the Equal Rights for All campaign, specifically the SJR 33 that is languishing in the legislature that you'll be seeing on a ballot next year after the ballot measure, after you get the signatures, I'm sure. Casey, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, always good to talk to you, my friend.
All the best to you. Thank you.
Onward.
Yes.
All right.
All the best. Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
Okay, folks. Hey, this is, you've been listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. I am now pleased to pass the baton here to my producer, Sherry Morich, and for some announcements.
Yes, we have tons of announcements. Thank you, Moses. You did fabulous. I love both the guests. They were amazing. Some serious issues coming up here in the next couple of years, like we haven't been dealing with some already.
Agreed.
Yeah. So I want to thank everybody for listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio at KBOO 90.7 FM. I keep wanting to say 94 for some reason. 90.7 FM here in Portland. And you know what? We are located on 8th and Burnside. And I bring that up because we have tons of opportunities for you, our audience, to come in and volunteer. You can do a show like what Moses and I are doing, and the gentleman behind us, he's coming in, he's got some awesome music lined up for you. We have volunteer events all the time. You can add music bedding to promos. You can record promos for and station IDs for KBOO. I do that all the time. You can create genre tags for programs. Be a news board operator. That's some of what I do. You can be a remote news anchor. That's awesome. You can do KBOO news producer, all sorts of things. Get a hold of our volunteer coordinator by getting on the computer machine, go into your email, and you're going to put in volunteer at kboo.org. That's volunteer at kboo.org, and volunteer with KBOO. Blues Festival is coming up. It's right around the corner. It's the July 4th weekend every year. I had the opportunity to volunteer last year, Moses, and you're going to volunteer with me this year. I'm trying to talk all my friends into volunteering with me at the Blues Festival. It's a great way to get in the door with KBOO and meet everybody. And so also, while you are on the KBOO website at kboo.org or kboo.fm, go on over and hit that donate button. And, you know, we're all volunteers. We do this out of our own, the goodness of our heart, our passion, and our love for broadcast and radio. And we can always use your support. And I need to shut that off. And thank you again for listening. We love you. Have a great night. And here is some Hammer.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
Después de esta pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con Annie.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
So,